Before we move on, let's take another look at what we now know about thinking big.
There is magic in thinking big, but it's so easy to forget. When you hit some rough spots, there's always danger your thinking will shrink in size. And when it does, you lose. To be sure, there are some people who want you to lose, to experience misfortunes, to be reprimanded. But these people can't hurt you if you remember three things. You win when you refuse to fight petty people. Fighting little people reduces you to their size. Stay big. Expect to be sniped at. It's proof you're growing. When that I haven't got what it takes feeling creeps up on you, think big. Remember, if you think you are weak, you are. If you think you are inadequate, you are. Whip that natural tendency to sell yourself short with these tools. Look important. It helps you think important. How you look on the outside has a lot to do with how you feel on the inside. Concentrate on your assets. Build a sell yourself on yourself commercial and use it. Know your positive self and put other people in proper perspective. The other person is just another human being. So why be afraid? Think big enough to see how good you really are.
So let's get down to work again. First, in order to think big, you must feel capable of big things. A good way to achieve this feeling is to develop the big thinker's vocabulary. Now, don't confuse this with big talk, the kind of overblown, swaggering style that begins and ends with just that, big talk. No, the big thinker's vocabulary is a way of using words, of expressing yourself in such a way as to motivate both you and others to act, and to act positively. David Schwartz has four basic ways to go about developing the big thinker's vocabulary.
1. Use big, positive, cheerful words to describe how you feel. 2. Make it a rule to have a big, positive word for all your friends and associates. 3. Use positive language to encourage others. Compliment people personally at every opportunity. And 4. Use positive words to define your plans to others. When people hear something like, "Here's some good news, we face a big opportunity," their minds start to sparkle.
Now, using positive ways to express yourself is only the beginning. The next step is to see things positively, but not positively as in Pollyanna, saying "that's nice" to everything or "I really like that" when you don't really care, will not put you on the path to thinking big. The way to think big, the positive way, is to see things in a new, better light. An empty lot, for example, becomes a new home, or a neighborhood park. In your mind, it's already complete with sandbox and swings. A student, obsessed with getting on the swim team, but seemingly indifferent to things like math and English, in your mind is a doctor or a designer of the future. In things, you see potential. In people, talent waiting to bloom. And that is a characteristic of all big thinkers.
Big thinkers see what can be, not just what is. To think big, train yourself to see what can be.
So do these three things. First, practice adding value to things. Ask yourself, what can I do to make this house or this business more valuable? A thing, whether it's a vacant lot or a business, has value in direct proportion to the ideas for using it.
Second, add value to people. As you move higher and higher in the world of success, more and more of your job becomes people development. Ask, what can I do to add value to my subordinates? What can I do to help them become more effective? Remember, to bring out the best in a person, you must first visualize the best. 3, and this is very important, practice adding value to yourself. Conduct a daily interview with yourself and ask, what can I do to make myself more valuable today? Visualize yourself not as you are, but as you can be. When you visualize yourself as you can be, specific ways for attaining your potential will suggest themselves. Just try it and see.
Well, I mean, it's easy for someone like Steven Spielberg to come up with a blockbuster idea for a great movie. But, you know, when people say to me, well, you should do something creative and you should get involved in writing movies or producing things, and I always think, well, I'm not that creative. I can't think of ideas like he can. I mean, you have to be a genius.
Let's clear up a common fallacy about the meaning of creative thinking. For some unknown reason, science, engineering, art, and writing got labeled as about the only truly creative pursuits. Accomplishments like these are evidence of creative thinking. Each step forward in the conquest of space is a result of creative thinking, and lots of it. But creative thinking is not reserved for certain occupations, and certainly it's not restricted to super intelligent people.
Creative thinking is within the reach of all of us, and we can practice our creativity in just about everything we do. For example, a low-income family devises a plan to send their child to a leading university. That's creative thinking. A neighborhood group gets the city to donate young trees in exchange for planting and tending the trees as they grow. That's creative thinking. A minister figures out that if he offers childcare for infants, he can double his Sunday evening attendance. It works, and that's creative thinking. The head of a community clinic figures out that by offering blood pressure tests at the local mall, the clinic can reach lots more people. That, too, is creative thinking. The rewards of all types of success, whether at work or at home or even in a relationship, hinge on finding ways to make it better. So let's see how we can develop ways to improve our creative thinking. The first step is one you're familiar with by now. Believe it can be done. David Schwartz says that he often asks a group of management trainees a question to illustrate this point. What can we do to eliminate jails within 30 years? Invariably, he says, the group of trainees looks bewildered. They look like they aren't quite sure of what he said, or they can't believe their ears. Then they begin viewing David Schwartz as if he's lost his marbles. So he repeats the question, what can we do to eliminate jails?
Now, once assured, I'm not joking. Someone always blasts me with something like, you mean to say you want to turn all those murderers and thieves and rapists loose, or we have to have jails. Then, of course, the others cut loose, too. All order would break down if we didn't have jails. Some people are born criminals. If anything, we've got to have more jails. Okay, after about 10 minutes of letting the group prove to me why we can't possibly eliminate the need for jails, I say to the group, look, I'm just trying to make a point. Each of you has come up with reasons why we can't eliminate the need for jails. Now do me a favor. Will you try extra hard for a few minutes to believe we can eliminate jails?
After trying this dozens of times, David Schwartz has discovered that when his audience is forced to think of creative solutions, they do. Suggestions come slowly at first, but soon the very people who 10 minutes before thought a positive solution was out of the question are coming up with all kinds of ideas.
Work to eliminate poverty. Most crime stems from low-income levels. Conduct research to spot potential criminals before they commit a crime. Develop surgical procedures to cure some kinds of criminals. Or educate law enforcement personnel in positive methods of reform. You see, belief releases creative power. Disbelief, on the other hand, puts the brakes on.
Here are a couple of general suggestions for how you can develop your powers of creativity through belief. Listen carefully.
First, and this is very important, eliminate the word impossible from your thinking and speaking vocabularies. Impossible is a failure word. Second, think of something special you've been wanting to do but felt you couldn't. Now, make a list of reasons why you can do it. Many of us whip and defeat our desires simply because we concentrate on why we can't, when the only thing worthy of our mental concentration is why we can.
Here's an example of just this kind of can't-do thinking. A reporter for a national newspaper recently wrote an article based on her original research into county boundaries throughout the U.S. What this reporter discovered was that there were too many separate counties. She pointed out that the original boundaries were established while we still traveled by horse and buggy. Now, however, with fast cars and good highways, distances between places had effectively shrunk, and so three or four counties could easily be combined under one county government. This would in turn cut down dramatically on duplicated services, and all of us as taxpayers would benefit. The writer of this article thought she had stumbled across a really great idea, so she interviewed 30 people at random to get their reactions. The result? Not a single person this reporter interviewed thought the idea had any merit, even though it would actually provide them with better government at less cost. Now that is an example of traditional thinking.
The traditional thinker's mind is paralyzed. He reasons, it's been done this way for 100 years, therefore it must be good and must stay this way. In truth, there is no one best way to do anything. There is no one best way to decorate an apartment, or landscape a lawn, or make a sale, or rear a child, or cook a steak, for that matter. There are as many best ways as there are creative minds. If we let tradition freeze our minds, new ideas can't sprout. Nothing grows in ice.
Try this test sometime soon. Watch how your friends and co-workers react when you propose one of these controversial ideas. Suggest a video therapy service, kind of like video dating, only here the psychologist is on video and potential clients can watch that therapist in action with a patient. Or, all 18-year-old men and women must spend one full year in civilian service to the country. Or that cars be completely banned from the midtown streets of all major cities. Or how about every working person has to change careers completely every 5 years? Make up your own ideas. The more outrageous, the better. The thing is, whether these ideas are practical does not matter in the least. What is important is how people react. David Schwartz points out that 9 out of 10 will laugh at your suggestions and never give them another thought. These people suffer from the paralysis of traditional thinking. But 1 out of every 10 people, or maybe 1 out of every 20, will look interested and say, "You know, that's an intriguing idea. Weird, but definitely intriguing." Now that person has a mind that's turned toward creativity. In order to rid yourself of the habit of traditional thinking, start by making yourself receptive to new ideas.
Welcome new ideas. Destroy those thought repellents like it won't work, or it can't be done, or it's useless, or it's pointless, or it's stupid. Just destroy them. A successful friend of mine who holds a major job with an insurance company said to me, "You know, I don't pretend to be the smartest guy in this business, but I think I am the best sponge in the insurance industry. I make it a point to soak up all the good ideas I can." Be an experimental person. Break up those fixed routines. Expose yourself to new restaurants, new books, new theaters, new friends. Take a different route to work someday. Do something new and different this weekend. If your work is in distribution, develop an interest in production, accounting, finance, or some other element of the business. This gives you breadth and prepares you for bigger responsibilities. Be progressive, not regressive.
Don't think, "That's how we did it on my old job," but rather, "How can I do it better now?" As you begin to shake off your old patterns of doing things and to start thinking bigger, it's time to learn to listen. Really listen. That's because the inspiration for new ideas is all around you. And listening carefully to what other people have to say is a way of harvesting these ideas.
In hundreds of interviews with people at all levels, I've made this discovery. The bigger the person, the more apt he or she is to encourage you to talk. On the other hand, the smaller the person, the more apt that person is going to preach to you. Top leaders in all walks of life spend much more time requesting advice than they do in giving it.
Look at it this way. A leader is a decision-making machine, and to manufacture anything, you've got to have raw material. In reaching creative decisions, the raw materials are the ideas and suggestions of other people.
Now, don't, of course, expect other people to give you ready-made solutions. That's not the primary reason for asking and listening. Ideas of others help to spark your own ideas so your mind becomes much more creative.
Here's one way that can work. Recently, David Schwartz instructed a group of managers at an executive seminar. Each meeting was designed to put the spotlight on one executive, who would spend 15 minutes on the topic, "How I Solved My Most Pressing Management Problem."
At the final session, a vice president of a milk processing company, did something different. Instead of telling people how he solved his problem, he announced his topic as needed help in solving my most pressing management problem. He quickly outlined the problem and then asked the group for ideas on how to solve it. Later, I talked to this man and I complimented him on his unique approach. His comment was, he said, "There are some very sharp people in this group. There's a good possibility something someone said may give me the clue I need to solve my problem." Note this. This executive presented his problem, then he listened.
In doing so, not only did this man get some raw material for his decision-making, but as a side benefit, the other executives in the audience enjoyed the discussion. So listening can bring rewards, not the least of which is creating fertile ground for new ideas. Now that you've learned how to draw inspiration from others, here are some tips on how to make those ideas bear fruit. Keep in mind that ideas, especially when they are just seeds of ideas, are very fragile.
Don't let your ideas escape. Write them down. Carry a notebook or some small cards with you. People with fertile creative minds know that a good idea may sprout any time, any place. Remember, memory is a weak slave when it comes to preserving and nurturing brand new ideas. File these ideas in an active file. A shoebox will do. But build a file and then examine your storehouse of ideas regularly. As you go over your ideas, some may, for various reasons, have no value at all. So you get rid of them. But so long as the idea has any promise, keep it. Finally, cultivate and fertilize your idea. Think about it. Investigate every angle. Then, too, remember, ideas have to be sold to someone. Customers, employees, the boss, friends, investors. Somebody must buy your idea.
Now that you've learned how important it is to capture and develop your new ideas, what do you plan to do with them? For your ideas to go anywhere, you must have goals.
Think of it. Every bit of human progress, our inventions, big and little, our medical discoveries, our engineering triumphs, were first visualized before they became realities. Space stations circle the Earth because scientists set conquer space as a goal. A goal is an objective, a purpose. A goal is more than a dream. It's a dream being acted upon. The important thing is not where you were or where you are, but rather where you want to go.
Corporations set goals. Can you imagine what would happen to IBM or General Motors if they didn't set long-term goals? And executives set personal timetables for themselves, where they want to be in 5 and 10 years. Take a tip from those who know how to turn goals into reality by acting today. Create your own plan. First, a short-term plan. 30 days is a good length. Then create a long-term plan. Where do you want to be in 5 years? Your plan should cover the things that are important to you, whether it's your job, your family, or your position in the community. Ideally, your plan should involve various aspects of your life. When it comes to shaping your goals, remember one thing. Put no limits on your goals. You may not be able to achieve every goal you set for yourself, but the higher you aim, the higher you go. And for those who say, "Well, you don't belong in the executive suite," or "You'd never make it through medical school," or "Whoever heard of sailing the world alone?"
In answer to that, one top space expert, Dr. Wernher von Braun, once said, "Man belongs where man wants to go."
But what if I fail? What if it doesn't work? That $60,000 piece of equipment may not increase our profits at all. It may be our downfall.
I just got laid off from my job, and I don't know what to do. I mean, I started looking in the newspapers, but I'm overwhelmed by it all.
Thinking big is a great personal philosophy, but you may wonder what to do when you've simply failed. David Schwartz says you have to keep reminding yourself that setbacks are a part of life. You can't avoid them. And in a way, the more you do, the more you're likely to fail.
It's not possible to achieve large success without hardships and setbacks. But it is possible to live the rest of your life without defeat. Big thinkers react to setbacks this way.
Big thinkers learn from their defeats. Doctors, for example, use setbacks as a way to learn more about both the patient and the disease. If a patient doesn't respond to treatment, they try something else. A good sales executive devotes several hours every month to figuring out what went wrong with an important sale that fell through. You've heard of Monday morning quarterbacks. Well, that's really what a good coach does. He watches a videotape of every game to spot the team's weakness, and if they lost, to figure out how to win next time. And commodities brokers wouldn't be in that high-pressure business very long if they couldn't handle losing tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes in minutes. The thing that distinguishes the person who thinks big, who sees the big picture, is that that person can take defeat and move on. Whether it's on the job or in your social life, don't let defeat get you down. Don't dwell on it, but do take a hard look at what went wrong. Here's a set of guidelines guaranteed to help you get through your next setback.
First, study every setback to pave your way to greater success. When you lose, decide to learn and go on to win the next time. Second, seek out your limitations and weaknesses and then take any action needed to correct them. Three, stop blaming luck. Four, blend persistence with experimentation. Stay with your goal, but try new approaches. Experiment. Finally, there truly is a good side in every situation. See the good side, and you'll defeat discouragement.
To sum up, defeat can be transformed into something valuable if you just respond to it positively.
Regard the setback as a lesson. Learn from it. Research it. Salvage something from every setback. Use it to propel you forward. Blend persistence with experimentation. Back off and start afresh. Try a new approach. Think big enough to see that defeat is a state of mind, nothing more.
The state of mind you want to create is a positive one, a mind wide open to new ideas and big plans. Over the past hour, you've learned many ways to develop the kind of thinking that will make you a big thinker. You now know how critical it is to set goals and to act on them. Action takes you where you want to go, and it destroys your fear of doing something at the same time. You've learned that your memory is at your service, and withdrawing positive thoughts that promote a can-do attitude is the best way to use it. And you will begin today to cure yourself of all forms of excusitis. Above all, conjuring for yourself the magic of thinking big means believing you can.
Think, I can do better. The best is attainable. Nothing in this world is being done as well as it can be. Thinking I can do better switches on your creative power. Think big and you'll live big. You'll live big in happiness, accomplishment, income, friends, and respect. Start now, right now, to discover how to make your thinking make magic for you. Start with this thought of the great philosopher Disraeli. Life is too short to be little.
This has been another in a series of Sound Ideas by Simon & Schuster. This cassette is based on the book The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. The executive producer is Malou Zahner. The engineer is Gary Fink. If you are interested in any other Simon & Schuster cassettes, please write to us for a catalog at the address on the back of this package.